A new study published by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation estimates the global population will rise by 2 billion people through the mid-60s and then plummet in much of the world while soaring in sub-Saharan Africa. The study examines fertility, mortality, and migration and projects global population to rise to 9.7 billion people by 2065 and then rapidly decline by close to 1 billion people by the end of the century. Now, beyond the global numbers are the dramatic population drops in Europe, most of Asia, South and Central America, and then juxtapose that against the large increases in Africa. The societal and economic challenges will be immense. No one country can address the issues alone. I invited Dr. Stein Emil-Volset, the lead author of the extensive report on global populations, to join me for a conversation that matters about the dramatic shifts underway that will shape our world by the year 2100.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Dr. Volset, thank you for joining me. You have been part of an international study that has been looking at population numbers, how they're going to grow through this century and into the next. Let's start with an overview of what you discovered, and then we can start to get into some of the details.
Yeah, let me first give you the big picture population results, which are quite fascinating. In 1950, the world population was at 2.6 billion people. And at the moment, it's 7.8 billion, so mm-hmm. close to 8 billion. Our most plausible forecast, which we call the reference forecasts, shows that the global population will continue to grow until the mid-2060s, and it will grow about 2 billion. But then we see a decrease during the last third of this century by 1 billion, so we end up at 8.8 billion in year 2100. A fascinating thing, or a key thing to remember from these numbers, is that this is not something that is happening everywhere.
Right.
If we look at sub-Saharan Africa, we project a continued increase from 1 billion people today to 3 billion in 2100, an increase by 2 billion. And then the region with the most significant population decline in numbers is Asia, where we will see a decline between now and 2100 by 1 billion. From 4 billion to 3 billion. So actually the populations of Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, according to our forecast, will be the same size in 2100, and these of course are huge shifts. In the rest of the world, we will also see widespread declines, but they do not contribute that importantly to the global picture or the big global numbers. And of course, the decline in Asia is driven by large declines, particularly in China, but also in India. And the only region outside of sub-Saharan Africa where we see an important increase in terms of number is North Africa and parts of Middle East.
These are extraordinary shifts. When you take a look at the number of lives that are going to be reduced in, you know, Southeastern Asia shifting into Africa, this is not a small number. And the increase in numbers in sub-Saharan Africa are going to put tax an already sort of underserviced infrastructure there. And one can't help but ask, what will be the societal and social impacts of such a dramatic increase in that part of the world?
Our forecasts deviate from those of the United Nations, and we can come back to that. But I would add that for sub-Saharan Africa, we project a smaller decrease than United Nations. They see an increase from 1 billion today to 4 billion in 2100. And of course, a tripling of infrastructure, just that, is a dramatic burden on the African continent. I think a Nigeria, which is the largest country in the region and the largest and the country that will sort of go through this transition to some or all the degree that is projected, will actually be the second largest country in the world after India, according to our projections. And there will be, I think, if this is going, and there are, of course, we have not built in what academics call Malthusian restrictions in our model. Is the physical infrastructure there? Will there be food production to sort of sustain this type of population growth? So we have just let the fertility, the mortality, the migration play in our model and not put those restrictions on, which could have led to lower numbers. And this could also affect the migration, of course. I think that the bottom line is that there will need to be made investments, if this is going to go well, somehow, say, in Nigeria, which is already in many ways a strong economy. But the question is, how is this handled in the coming years?
What was happening in China and the Eastern Asia that is now going to start to see this decline in numbers, not so much in India, but particularly, of course, in China? Is this going to be the result of their one-child policy, that we now start to see the maturing of that population coupled with prosperity?
I think what we are seeing with our model, which in a sense is relatively simple, what we do to produce the population estimates and also the United Nations, we forecast mortality, fertility, and migration, or actually net migration. We look at the difference between in and out, and model net migration. And from this, I would say, you know, from the three inputs we have, mortality, migration, and fertility, it's really all about fertility. Yes. So when you ask if it's the China one-child policy, yes, it is. Yep. And now the China one-child policy has been lifted, but still you don't see much of a change, or at least not so far, even if women and families are allowed to have more children, you don't see a dramatic or important increase at this point in time. That's the next part of the story here is actually, I think most of what we see and also the differences to the United Nations, we can explain it by the fertility part of our model. Mm-hmm. And there are some quite amazing numbers there that I would like to share with you. And if we go back again to 1950 and look at fertility, and first I have to just explain the term replacement fertility. The replacement fertility of 2.1 children per woman is the level of fertility that is needed to sustain the population if we ignore migration in or out. and mortality within the ranges of mortality we see in the world at this moment. And in 1950, it was five countries in the world that had fertility below replacement. But if we go to today, to 2020, half of the countries, 100 of the 195 countries we looked at, actually have below replacement fertility, and some countries have had that for quite a few years. For example, Canada or the United States has had sub replacement fertility since the late 1970s. But populations have not declined in Canada or the US. They have increased, and that is because of immigration. But if we look forward to 2100, we forecast that from 100 countries below replacement today, that number will increase to 183 of the 195 countries in the world. So actually across the board, also in sub-Saharan Africa, most countries will be below replacement, according to our forecasts.
What is the single, is it one single factor, or is it a combination of a couple of factors that drive down the fertility rate?
Yeah, that's also a very key question. And also it gets to the heart of our method, because we have modeled fertility as a function of female education and what we call met need for modern contraceptives. So, and in the past, we can explain more than 80% of the variation in fertility across countries by those two factors. And actually, it's one of the assumptions of our model that relationship will remain into the future. So what our model, we first forecast female education for every country, and also contraceptives or access or met need for contraceptives, and those guide our fertility forecasts.
Prosperity plays a role as well, does it not? Economies that are seeing a more robust quality of life for people, the evidence seems to suggest that the wealthier you are, the fewer children you have as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. That is a factor, and and urbanization is also a factor. When people move from rural societies to the city, you know, children, they often become, instead of being a necessity, they can become an economic burden in a city situation where it costs money to have children. And this, of course, is going on all over the world, the urbanization. And also it has to do with women taking more part in the workforce in many countries, and that also it just leaves less time for having many or large families. There are many factors at play.
When I took a look at the numbers, and we've talked about what happens in Africa and Asia, and we start to see that shift. But what we haven't touched on is what is going to be the societal and economic impact of decreasing older populations in countries like Russia and throughout Europe. How is that going to wind up impacting social services that you would normally be supported by a growing next generation? We're going to see actually the generation that's moving into older age and requiring those social services is going to start to outnumber the generation behind them, and they're going to need that support. So what will be some of the consequences of that in countries like France or Norway, where you're from. How will these projections have to be taken into play as different governments around the world start to try and adjust to this changing demographic?
With the shifts and what we predict will happening, and because of fertility going down everywhere, families and women, they simply seem to be choosing to have fewer children. And this we see this will accentuate. And this is also causing what we call inversion of the population pyramid. There will be more old people than young people. Mm-hmm. And as you say, this is a huge challenge for taking care of the elderly part of population. Either they be healthy or the nursing home capacity, hospital capacity, and we know with a large proportion of the population above 65, above 75, above 80, 90, and fewer young people. It's clear this will be a challenge. And many countries have discussed aging, and this we have seen this for a while, but now in the remaining 80 or next 50 and remaining 80 years of this century, this will really be a huge challenge. And I think it's key that governments and people and anyone start to think about this and have a longer horizon on planning, because I don't think, to some extent, these things, they might not happen exactly as we have forecasted, but we are not that far.
One of the other things that comes to mind, and you've highlighted it in the report, is the fact that you're going to have increasing populations in certain parts of the world, decreasing populations elsewhere. How are we going to make sure that you have the labor force that you require where population numbers are going down? And how do you ensure that there's access to opportunity, as economic and otherwise, for people who are going to be coming into life in more and more crowded spaces? But then we run into the rub of nationalism and all sorts of different challenges. There really has to be broad thinking about how are we going to make an appropriate distribution of resources and wealth around the world. Otherwise, we'll have greater and greater conflict.
This is absolutely correct. And I think we really need to consider, I think, some how the world's wealth is, how and where it's invested. And I think it at this point in time, seeing what we see, and for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, it would be wise to continue to invest in education and in employment opportunity in that region, in collaboration. Of course, it's also a message in our paper that what we could call liberal or flexible immigration could, at least in the short term, alleviate some of these issues, but we can't move all the people. And we need also to make sure that, as we all know, migration is not a simple solution. there are issues in the countries sending out migrants, and there are issues in the countries receiving migrants, and migrants are also in a difficult situation. And I think the whole migrant issue should be dealt with in a very serious and international collaboration, right? Because not a single country can solve these problems on their own, and there will be different solutions.
before we wrap up, there's one thing that I think about. You know, the United Nations was projecting that the global population could rise to as high as 11 billion people by the end of this century, and you're saying no, more like 8.8. That's a big difference in number. What was some of the significant elements of your research that verged or did not were not quite in alignment with the UN that you and your team came up with? Your projections, which are different than those of the UN.
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually, and I think both we and the UN, because they have also been interviewed and in the media now the last few days, and I think we agree on why. It has to do with how to forecast fertility, and. For many years from 1950 and until now, in many countries, the fertility drop was relatively linear. It went down. But then, and it goes down below the replacement level. So it could go from 3 or from, like it did, in from 3.5, like it did, like was the case with Canada or the US in 1950, or in many African countries and other countries higher. It went relatively linear down below the replacement level, but then it has to level off at some point between 1 and 2 children per woman. We haven't really seen this number. I think there are a few exceptions, but we haven't really seen this number go much below 1.2, but it has tended to end up between 1.2 and 1.9. And then the question is, it levels off, and then the UN model actually... They think that they have an assumption that in most countries there will be a fertility recovery, so it will tend to rebound up to 1.8, 1.9 by the end of the century. Whereas our forecast, we have not any assumption about that built in. So actually, when we hit the low level, many of our forecasts will tend to stay down there or even decrease slightly. And actually, you have a very nice illustration of this in if you compare the forecast for the US and Canada between ours and the United Nations.
I really thank you for taking the time to share the insights from this most fascinating look at where the global population is going. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.